Hashtag Monday the 22nd.
Making you feel good in the morning.
On BBC Radio Berkshire.
Are you up for it?
Andrew's away this week. Sarah Walker looking after the Andrew Peach show. Sarah's back tomorrow from 7. She's finding out why people in Henley have been offered the chance to buy one of the country's oldest theatres and, of course, what they plan to do with it. Also, Maggie Philbin will be on site at the Kenton Theatre in Henley with Sarah Walker tomorrow morning from 7. Now, Henley are very much talk of the moment, really. We're joined in the studio this afternoon by Lizette Offley. Good afternoon.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Thank you very much for coming in. The family phone in this afternoon. Some of the things we're going to talk about, we'll come on to it in just a second. But first of all, this story in the news today that's caught our attention about the family home. Would we go back to buy our family home? There's a couple here that have indeed done that. They've gone back to her parents and bought the home off them. Now, again, reasons behind this, of course, there's an absolute plethora of reasons. But again, you have personal experience of this.
Well, not exactly that. But, I dreamt when I was a kid of buying our family home in Honiton, Devon. I always thought I would. And in fact, a few years ago, I took my mum back there. And unbeknown to her, I'd arranged with the lady who now owns the house for us to actually stay there for the weekend and swap stories.
Really?
Yeah.
And how was the lady when you first approached her? Was she just fine with it?
Well, funnily enough, I wrote her a letter. I didn't know what her name was. I didn't know who was there. So I wrote the letter to the house name, Nethercott, 229 High Street, Honiton. But it turns out that she took a quick glimpse at it, didn't recognise the name Nethercott, didn't know the house was called that, assumed it was the surname of somebody else, and put it to one side apparently for months, meaning to try and track down who these Nethercott people were.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, the whole thing nearly fell flat. But eventually, she, out of curiosity, she opened it up and then discovered it was, from some strange person wanting to come and visit.
Sure. So,
and then she offered, would you like to come and stay for the weekend, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible because, she doesn't know you from Adam at all, does she?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I should probably think quite an emotional trip for your mum, was it?
Well, absolutely. But for me as well, because I was very, very happy there. And that's why I can understand why people would want to buy their parents' properties, places where they grew up. It was a very happy time for me. I was born there. My brother was born there. In fact, my grandma died there. And all of that, it just represents my family and the love that we have in the family.
So you think certainly that more of this, perhaps, of buying the family home is drawn to an emotional connection?
Oh, yeah, of course, it must be, mustn't it?
Rather than perhaps just because it's easier to strike a deal up with your mum and dad rather than... I don't know.
I bet that's also true.
Well, it could be, A gentleman who's just done that is Martin Wood. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, Rory.
Now, you were a resident in Lower Ellie for, 25 years, we believe?
Yes, 25 years.
So tell us what happened with you.
Well, yes, we were living happily in Lower Ellie. Our children were getting older and older and showing no inclination to leave home. And then out of the blue, my mum, who lived up in the Midlands near Warwick, in the countryside, announced that she was going to move into the nearby town because she was getting on a bit and she wanted to be nearer to all the services. So two things came together, really. Firstly, we decided that if the children weren't going to leave home, we would have to leave home. And secondly, my family home became suddenly available. Too good an opportunity to miss.
And I suppose, you did the deal privately then? There was no estate agent involved?
That's right. Yeah, that's right, yes.
And of course, then I suppose just the other part of it was just getting it done legally through a conveyancer or solicitor, was it?
Yes, and the tricky bit of agreeing a price, of course.
Yeah, again, how did you come to do that?
Well, you go through the normal stages, get a valuation done, and take it from there, really.
And again, was it quite a lengthy process, or did you do it quite quickly?
The process itself was the normal process, which you think is going to be quick, and actually takes longer than when all the solicitors get involved. But it took about 3 months from beginning to end. In fact, it went rather quicker than we thought. So we actually let the house out initially before we moved in, because we had to sell our house in Reading as well, of course. So it was about a year before we actually moved into the house in the end.
Sure. Lizette Offley is our guest this afternoon with the family phone. We were just hearing her story that had a very sort of emotional kind of connection. I mean, Lizette, can you sort of...
Well, I was just wondering, is that how it's been for you? Has it been a commercial connection for you?
Oh, undoubtedly, yes. I mean, I think it's for me, it's important to have a link with the local place, you know, to feel you've got some roots.
Yeah.
Particularly being in the countryside, I mean, it's quite different from living in the town. And it's familiar as well, although it's 30 years since I was here. I mean, people I recognise, and some of them even recognise me, although I've changed a bit. And, going into the house, there's a strong emotional pull there, I think.
It sounds as if you really feel like you belong there.
Well, yes, the strong sense of attachment to the local, you know, all the fields around, etc. You know, I've walked them, so trees are familiar, the land is familiar, and houses, yes, there is, definitely.
So, Martin, what do you think is going to happen whenever you come to sell the property?
I imagine, I'd like to think that one of the children would be interested in buying it. I
mean, so it's just going to stay in the family?
This is interesting because, of course, as grandchildren, they used to love coming here and visiting their granny. So they like coming and visiting us now. They've got particularly strong attachments to the house. And, yes, hopefully they will feel that they would like to live here. One day in the future.
Sure.
Not just yet, I hope, because we're intending to stay here for a bit longer, yeah?
Well, that sounds like the situation we had in Honiton, because that was actually my grandparents' house, where my mum grew up, which I didn't mention. And then, of course, I was born there and, you know, spent many years there. And in fact, you know, when we did go back a few years ago, so my mum's in her 70s now, when we went back, she must have been late 60s, and we walked up and down the street, and, you know, there were still people popping out of shops, pointing and saying, "It's you, isn't it?" Hi, Therese.
See, Martin, you got all this to look forward to, you know. You're sort of going to move back to the family heir and everyone's going to go, "Hey, all right, Martin, how's it going?"
Well, it's like, I must admit, there's a rather nice pub just 50 yards up the road.
Now we know. Now we know. Well, Martin, well, all the best with the property. And,
yes,
and I suppose the stories are now generations that are literally now going to have to take the house on, literally dragging it to the Antiques Roadshow saying, "Well, this is what was handed down to me." So.
Yes,
thanks for coming on, Martin.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. That's Martin Wood there, former resident of Lower Early, lived there for 25 years, just bought his parents' property. Now, Lisette, with what you do for a living, you know, a lot of the sort of therapies and stuff that you carry out are to do with not only just sort of medical conditions, but sort of, you know, human emotions and the way we think and the way our brain can kind of control the rest of our body.
Mm, well, you know, there's an amazing discovery not very long ago. Your brain is actually connected, you know, through your head to the rest of your body. And once we realised that, all sorts of things became possible.
And suss that out, yes, exactly. But from the point of view of people do have real strong emotional connections, and I suppose that's what you're working with sort of day in, day out to kind of help understand, isn't it?
Yeah, but sometimes just understanding something doesn't make any changes. People come to me because they want to make changes. And, of course, all the emotional stuff is often in the way. But, you know, you were talking about medical conditions. It's amazing how much influence we can have over the workings of our bodies.
Even if you're so emotionally drawn to maybe try and buy a property that you maybe can't even afford, which would be even worse, wouldn't it? If this is something that you actually wanted to do, was to take a former family, you know, property on and just the money wasn't there.
Well, it's a funny old thing, but sometimes when you change your mindset, things become possible. Several years ago, I bought a house that was far too expensive for me. And I had a friend who kept saying to me, "Look, you could do this, you can convert it into two places. There's all sorts of things you can do with this place. You must be able to find a way to buy it." I said, "No, you're wrong. It's just not going to happen." And I was right, because with that mindset, it really wasn't going to happen. And then one morning I woke up at 4:20, a bit earlier than I normally do, with a question. And the question was, what would it take to buy this house? So it wasn't, "I've got to buy this at all costs." It was just an open-ended question. What would it take? So then I started researching. And eventually the upshot was that I bought it.
And then you find the solution yourself.
I found a way.
It is. Interesting story, though. I mean, perhaps, I don't know whether or not you've come across this. Has this happened in your family? Are you in this situation right now? If so, feel free to get in touch. It's 0845 900 1041. That's 0845 900 1041. Lisette Offley is our guest this afternoon for the family phone-in. We'll be talking about drinking in front of your children. Is it a good or bad thing? BBC Radio Berkshire, that's Baby Bird and You're Gorgeous. Feel free to take part in anything we're talking about this afternoon. 07786 202303 is the text number. That's 07786 202303. We do invite you to come on. Many thanks again to Martin Wood for joining us on the programme just a second ago. Lisa Offley is our guest this afternoon. She's from Sounds Positive, a company she runs in Henley-on-Thames. Lizette's been a Henley resident for the last 20 years, and she joins us on the family phone in this afternoon. Coming up after the Travel You Trust and the weather, going to be talking about whether or not drinking in front of your children is a good or bad thing.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel You Trust.
As it happens.
Good afternoon, just approaching 2:30 with the latest Travel You Trust. Here's Barry Lewis.
Thanks very much, Rory. Good afternoon. Traffic on the M4 appears to be flowing well. No reported problems through our area. Traffic looks to be moving well in both directions. On the London-bound carriageway, though, at junction 4B, M25, after that earlier lorry fire, the hard shoulder is closed on the exit slip road, not causing a major delay, but the lorry will be recovered after rush hour tonight. At the moment, traffic is moving quite well there. No other reported problems on motorways or in town centres across the county. At Datchet, though, you'll find Horton Road closed in both directions by an accident. That's around Link Road. It's causing queuing traffic just by the fish shop, and that's been ongoing since before 11 o'clock this morning, in fact. On the railways, no reported problems this afternoon. I'm Barry Lewis, Travel You Trust from BBC Radio Berkshire.
See Berkshire's travel cameras on demand
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
Good afternoon, this is Rory in for Sarah. You're listening to BBC Radio Berkshire. Thank you very much for your company. The weather for the rest of today, well, it should stay dry with some light winds still around. Temperatures overnight down to around a single degree Celsius. That's about 34 degrees Fahrenheit. There'll be plenty of mist and fog forming. I'm not going to foam fog, are they? No, it's going to form overnight by tomorrow morning. Then for Thursday, we've got highs tomorrow of 7 degrees Celsius. That's 45. It'll be mainly dry for Thursday morning. Plenty of cloud around, and then rain and showers heavy at times across Berkshire into the afternoon. Then Friday through to Sunday for the weekend, remaining unsettled with further showers, some of them heavy and wintry through Friday and Saturday. But it should be drier and brighter by Saturday afternoon. Frost and ice is likely overnight Saturday into Sunday. For a full 5-day local forecast, you can go online bbc.co.uk/Berkshire. Good afternoon, it's the family phone-in on BBC Radio Berkshire, and feel free to get in touch, 07786 202 303. That's 07786 202 303. Now, Lizette Offley is our guest this afternoon, and we're just talking a little bit there about houses, emotional sort of, I suppose, connections through that. This next subject is more of a visual sort of subject, in the sense that there's an article in the news today saying that children copy parents in their drinking habits. This comes from drinking in front of your children. Lizette, what do you think to this?
Children copy parents doing everything. That's how we learn.
True, yes. So studies, therefore, showing that we're now copying our parents. So if our parents drink, we're doing exactly the same thing. Would you say there's truth in this?
Absolutely. Until the age of six, we're in a permanent state of hypnosis. We're in a permanent state of the ideal learning place. So we just absorb stuff without, you know, if a parent tells us to do something, we just do it without questioning whether that's a good and appropriate in the current circumstances and whether we can do it in other circumstances. That's what we get when we get older, when we start getting a different perspective. But as a child, especially in the early years, you simply just absorb everything around you. You learn by copying. And so obviously, if the parents are going to be drinking, then the children will automatically expect to copy. It doesn't mean to say they're necessarily allowed to, but it's what they'll expect.
Sure. Now, this is after a Department for Children, Families and School study suggests that children from heavy drinking households, so we must sort of say at the moment this is from heavy drinking households, are more likely to use alcohol themselves. Half of the young people who have drunk alcohol were given it by their parents in the first place, and it all comes as ministers urge parents to help their children make sensible decisions about drinking alcohol. Did your parents drink in front of you?
Do you know, I just don't remember. I guess so. There was the occasional gin and tonic, but it just wasn't a big deal, just not something that I ever really thought about.
So you obviously then went from a heavy drinking household.
No.
No, neither was I.
It's just something that I was aware of. I was also aware years ago that my father smoked. He gave up years later.
Mm-hmm.
But it just never occurred to me in the situation and the conversations that we had and the environment that we had that that was something that I was going to do.
So did your parents ever give you alcohol at any point?
Oh, I'm sure mid-teens. I remember we lived in Germany when I was 14 to 16 and I loved gin and tonic. And so I would have the occasional gin and tonic, but you can imagine it was the weakest thing.
Sure, yeah, it was more tonic than gin,
exactly.
I would think. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was a really sensible approach because nobody was banning it and then making it seem like a really naughty, fun thing to do, just
sure.
like the grown-ups. Really sensible about it.
Again, I mean, interesting, obviously, growing up on the continent like that in Europe, because it is true that they do have a totally different approach to it than we do here in Britain, don't they?
Well, Dad was in the army, that's why we were there, and they had to entertain once in a while.
So they had to do things the German way?
No, not the German way, actually, no, but the army way. The army has, you know, traditions. There are things that you do, and when you do them the right way. There's a way to do them.
So, and at least you were involved and brought into that.
Well, exactly. I can just remember there being the occasional party, but they weren't... They were fun parties, but they weren't out of control. And I remember, you know, going to the mess for some do's there. And again, it was all good fun, but everything was... I don't know, just well, again, not out of control, just polite and there's a way to behave.
And sociable, sure.
And no doubt there will have been one or two people who were drinking too much, but it's not something that I was aware of at that time.
Sure. So even at the time, you know, when you're being given alcohol, I mean, from my point of view, it was sparkling wine or something like that at Christmas, you know, it wasn't... perhaps anything as strong as a spirit, but I suppose alcohol is alcohol. I mean, did they say anything to you at the time, or just a little one?
Yeah, but not like that. Ooh, just a little one, as if, you know, a big one would have been a very naughty thing.
Right, sure.
But just that, you know, this is a treat, and, you know, have a weak one. I just knew it was a weak one. I was aware that it was. It wasn't an issue. It just tasted nice. I liked the taste. It's probably more tonic than anything else.
Sure. And probably more lemon as well. Yeah. And ice and things. It's just, also, the survey goes on to say that it found that 8 out of 10 parents had no pre-planned strategies to tackle irresponsible drinking by their children. I suppose this is the thing, isn't it? Is at the time as a parent, if you are going to give your child alcohol, how do you know which way it's going to lead?
It's got to be so difficult, and you get it right with one child, and the same strategy doesn't work for the second one.
No.
It must be terribly, terribly difficult, I think.
Now, you and I, at the moment, we don't have children, but you were a teacher for an awful long time.
Yeah.
So
20 years.
Vast experience of young kids. I mean, was this ever anything that ever crept into the classroom?
Absolutely not, no. Not in my experience in the schools that I taught in. I'm aware that many of the children came from backgrounds that were tricky, that were tough for them. But the schools tried their very best to provide a stable environment. And in fact, you know, I think one of the biggest contributions I made over that time was setting out ground rules, having a structure, letting the kids test it because that's their job, and then proving to them that, yep, I said, if you did this, this is going to happen, and then have that happen. Because I think for many kids, they don't have that structure at home. You know, I think it's different these days, parents and children, from how it was for me when I was growing up. In my day, all those years ago, parents made the rules and the children grew up aware of the rules. Now, whether you followed them or disobeyed them was something slightly different. But, you know, I think things are far more friendly and relaxed. And I think parents and children have more of a sort of an equal partnership. Now, there's some good things about that. And I think there are some difficult things about that. So like you just said, parents don't necessarily have a strategy for introducing the idea of alcohol and then for coping when, let's face it, we've all made mistakes. We've all gone too far.
Sure.
That's how one finds one's limit. You know, it's when you're a kid, you're climbing a tree, you fall out of the tree. Okay, you learn something. You make sure you don't fall out of the tree again.
Because, that's right.
You know, by making mistakes, we learn, we grow, we thrive. And it's the same with alcohol.
Again, this is obviously all part of a government's initiative to reduce underage drinking more so than even binge drinking. I mean, I suppose you could even put those two subjects as being completely different. But if you were to have children, how would you approach it?
I don't know, and I'm not sure that I'd necessarily get it right. I think I would try very hard to do what my parents did, because it worked.
So at least give it to your early teens then, perhaps?
Yeah, but not like a dose of medicine. But like, you know, you might give a child a glass of Coke. For me, once in a while. It's not something I'd want to be doing all the time, because I'm aware of what Coke consists of. It might taste nice, so have it as a treat once in a while. That's the same with alcohol. But, you know, people use alcohol because we all have ways of making ourselves feel better, and some people use alcohol to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's your parents' strategy for feeling better, what are you going to learn as a kid?
Well, that's exactly it, isn't it? I mean, you know, the saying goes that we are just a mirror image, aren't we, of our parents before us. So, again, would you say that this therefore then is more, it harks back to mental conditions then?
I think it all goes back to being in charge of your state of mind rather than it controlling you. I think it's to do with recognising your emotions and what they're there for. They're there to flag up whether your needs are being met or not. If you're feeling good, then some of your needs are being met. If you're not feeling good, then some of your needs are not being met. So there's the clue. Go look to see what it is that needs to be done and go and take responsibility and get it done. But to be run by your emotions, I'm not feeling good, and just thrash about and try and, in the instant, feel better by eating too much, by drinking too much, by spending too much. There are so many different things that people end up doing. And just for a short while, it makes them feel better. And of course, then it comes with long-term consequences afterwards. But the next time they feel bad, they start thinking about doing that same thing again. They don't focus on how they feel afterwards. They just focus on the feeling of wanting to feel better in that moment.
Of getting there as well. I mean, I do like the approach, and you mentioned it a second ago, of it being a treat, therefore, like a minor goal, if you like, just getting towards something, having it as a treat, and then moving on from it. Because one thing I feel about giving children or early teens alcohol is at least it becomes nothing special then, which I think is,
yes,
what you're alluding to there.
Yes, I guess so.
Then if it then comes into their life in the later part, 16, 17, 18, it's like, oh, no, I know exactly what that stuff is. I know what it tastes like. I know what happens if you have too much of it, and I know what happens if you have too little of it. So do you think really that the kind of treat mechanism or the sort of treat gimmick is the best way to introduce it?
I really don't know. I just think that you have to keep an eye on the children. You have to know the children and know how their brain processes information, whether they're the sort of person who would react badly to being told, nope, you can't have this till you're an adult. Because if they're the sort of child who wants to become an adult sooner rather than later, and of course most kids do, don't they? That might be one way that they try to prove that they're an adult. I really don't know. Who knows? Each child is an individual.
And I suppose what you're saying then, you have to treat each individual case as an individual circumstance.
You just have to do your best.
And what is the best? Has this happened to you? Did your parents drink in front of you? Did they drink to excess? Was it to the point where you thought, this could affect me? It's the family phone in here on BBC Radio Berkshire. If you'd like to get in touch, the number is 0845 900 1041. That's 0845 900 1041. Would you drink in front of your children? BBC Radio Berkshire, good afternoon. Thank you for your company. Hope you're enjoying the programme this afternoon. This is Rory in for Sarah Walker. Sarah's looking after the Andrew Peach Show. She's back tomorrow from 7 o'clock. Going to find out why the people in Henley have been offered the chance to buy one of the country's oldest theatres and what they plan to do with it. Maggie Philbin will also be out and about in Henley on that story. Sarah Walker back here tomorrow on BBC Radio Berkshire from 7 o'clock. Lizette Offley joins us this afternoon. We've been talking about children coping with, I suppose you could say coping with parents drinking in front of them. This is after a study has said that 8 out of 10 parents had no pre-planned strategies to tackle irresponsible drinking by their children. It's a Department for Children, Families and Schools study which has brought out this research. One in four of the children interviewed said their parents had never talked to them about alcohol. Good afternoon, Jade. You're in Slough.
Hello there, yes.
And you want to come on to talk to us about your daughter-in-law?
Yeah, I'm concerned about what's occurring in the household. I have two grandchildren, one's 7 and the other one's about 2.5. And my son is separated from the mother, from my daughter-in-law. And he told me today that he'd phoned last evening and it was about 6:30. And she was, you know, she'd had a lot to drink by then. And he asked to speak to the children, and she said, oh, you can't speak to them, they're dead, which is pretty awful. It just worries me, this situation. It's not the first time. You know, she's had a lot to drink, and the children have been up playing in the house, you know, while she's getting over her hangover in bed at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, this sort of thing. And it's regular, and it concerns me, that because when anything goes wrong in a situation, they always say, oh, what were the grandparents doing? What were the parents doing? And from a grandparent's point of view, you know, I am concerned, and I think to myself, ooh, you know, if you do something, then it might be in a situation where you're not allowed to see the grandchildren. There's all that to it.
So as far as you're concerned, and it sounds to me like your son's fairly removed from this sort of thing, so this hasn't been a result of you drinking in front of your son then, is it?
No. No.
But certainly your daughter-in-law is now drinking in front of your grandchildren.
That's the case, yeah. And I mean, you know, there are issues. I mean, my son has split up with a girlfriend, and there were problems on both sides. You know, I'm not defending him in any way. He's not got a drink problem. He does have a drug problem, shall we say. And there was a lot of dope in his life, and that's what's caused the breakup in their relationship, I believe.
Sure.
But there's more to it than that. There's issues on both sides, and I wouldn't defend either one of them. But the children are in the middle of this, and you look at, you know, this is what's happening, and this is how the situation they're being brought up into. But when he always phones in the evening to speak to the children. He sees them at weekends. He's a weekend dad, like many other weekend fathers. But, you know, to be told, oh, you can't speak to the kids, they're dead, that's pretty awful. I mean, he could hear them in the background.
No, that's not very nice at all, is it?
You know, I am worried about this.
I'm sure you are. I mean, how old are the kids, Jade?
Seven. One is seven and one is 2.5.
Oh, well, so they are quite young then.
Yeah.
So does your daughter-in-law work?
No.
Right, so, again, there's no real...
He's supporting them.
Right.
He works, my son works, and he's supporting them. But I think there's also, you know, she's claiming benefits.
Okay. Lizette, what do you think to this? I mean, again, do you think that these children now are more likely to develop a problem because of what they're seeing in front of them?
I think so.
It's a very sad situation, isn't it?
Mm.
And it must be so, so difficult as a grandparent.
It is difficult because, you know, how far do you go with this?
Yeah.
I don't feel that, you know, I could talk to her about it.
Mm.
Or suggest help. I don't really know what to do. Maybe I should.
Well, I guess the reason why the usual reason why people drink is because they're not coping any other way with life.
Mm.
Drinking is the best that they know to cope as best they can with life.
Mm.
So it looks very much as if she's simply not coping, and of course, you know, she'd probably be the last one to admit that.
Mm.
Have you gone to
see? It's quite a regular thing.
Have you gone to seek any professional help at all, Jane?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, that could be the first step. Well, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story.
Okay.
And that's Jade in Slough, who is concerned about her grandchildren aged 7 and 2.5 because of her daughter-in-law's drinking in front of them. I mean, this backs up this research, really, Lizette, doesn't it?
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know how the children are going to respond. I do know that...
But it is happening, though, isn't it? As in excess drinking in front of children.
Yes. Well, yeah, people aren't always coping as well as you'd like them to cope. People do whatever they can just to survive. And, you know, I've had clients who have come to me with... For example, I had a teenager a while back who had been self-harming and was anorexic. And both her parents were alcoholics. And she was struggling with that. And I guess you might say that anorexia is not a very good strategy for making yourself feel better, but it was the best that she knew. It was something that she could do, that she could control. In some ways, she was able to manipulate the rest of the family, given that she didn't feel like she had an equal say under normal circumstances, because the parents were out of it most of the time. And as a teenager, it was deadly embarrassing to her. So, you know, when anybody is struggling, it's not just them who gets affected, it's the people around them. It's all the people that they love and love them back who suffer as well. And of course, when it comes to children, they don't have that full perspective. They can't go somewhere else and get a better perspective. Okay, so here's mum's strategy, here's somebody else's strategy, which one do I choose? All they know is the environment they're in. And even though kids often look as if they're blissfully unaware of what's going on, that they're always aware of, you know, when mummy's not available, they're aware of that. And it might become something that they thrash against, or it might be something that they just become resigned to.
Sure. Lizette Offley, thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. It's been a fascinating discussion. If you've missed any of what we've said, or you caught it halfway through, you can always go online, bbc.co.uk/Berkshire, and go to the iPlayer and listen again. Lizette, thanks for coming in.